Welcome to the Tapraxy Method, creating confident learners. The Tapraxy Method uses a unique combination of breath work, brain body work, gratitude, and a clay-based program to affect the neuroplasticity of the brain in students. To help strengthen their mind-body connection, help them develop a growth mindset, and most importantly, trust and confidence in themselves. Make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any episodes. One way to support the Creating Confident Learners podcast is to leave a 5-star review and written review anywhere you listen to it. Thanks so much, and let's get started.
He was in the middle where it was really, really messy, and him and Vinny Marino had a little bit of a play in their relationship as yoga teacher and yogi. And Vinny comes up to him. He's like, oh, you look like a mess. Like, what's going on with your crazy hair? And Dennis, without skipping a beat, was like, yeah, all stages of growth are not always pretty. And I think about that with learning. Learning is messy. It's not always pretty, but sometimes we really, really learn through the mess of things. And that story just always makes me laugh when I think about growth and learning in life. And in personal growth, oftentimes when we see something that needs to be addressed or changed about ourselves or our life or our habits, that's kind of been a long time. The rewiring of that, the undoing of that is a bit messy. Be sure to sign up for the Foundation course. This course is here to support you, both parents and educators. It teaches the exact foundational tools I have used with students to increase focus, ease anxiety, and help raise confidence and self-esteem so that they can succeed in all areas of their lives, including academics. It's made into bite-sized digestible pieces to help you apply these tools right away. I keep coming back to the idea that learning something new is oftentimes messy. And it's funny to me, though, with those big projects, first impressions, you know, how you present something is how people make a snap judgment. But those lifelong lessons, those really hard ones, often they're pretty messy too. And I was thinking about like those very cutesy teaching worksheets and so forth, where a kid just does stuff, but sometimes there's no real thinking involved. Like, I'm usually more interested in the messiness of their chicken scratch and their thinking and how they're processing versus something looking quote unquote pristine if there's no learning that's involved. And this kind of reminds me of a time my friend Dennis Morton, he's a Peloton instructor. I've known him for a long time and he's quite a interesting and insightful guy. So just on this idea of learning being messy or growth being messy, we went to one of Vinny Marino's yoga classes at Power Yoga in Santa Monica while he was in the process of growing out his hair long. So there's two Dennis Mortons there in Peloton. There's the one where he started with, he had really long hair and now he's back to his short hair again. But he was in the middle where it was really, really messy. And him and Vinny Marino had a little bit of a play in their relationship as yoga teacher and yogi. And Vinny comes up to him. He's like, oh, you look like a mess. Like, what's going on with your crazy hair? And Dennis, without skipping a beat, was like, yeah, all stages of growth are not always pretty. And I think about that with learning. Learning is messy. It's not always pretty, but sometimes we really, really learn through the mess of things. And that story just always makes me laugh when I think about growth and learning in life. And in personal growth, oftentimes when we see something that needs to be addressed or changed about ourselves or our life or our habits, that's kind of been a long time. The rewiring of that, the undoing of that is a bit messy. It's not quite so linear. We might take 2 steps forward and then 3 steps back and then 2 steps forward again and 1 step back. So the same thing with education. When I think of a lot of the educational material, it's very cute. It's fun to do. And I do remind kids that if they're doing a final project, it's part of how their teacher is going to grade them is presentation. They can spend 5 minutes on this big project, but make it look amazing. They're going to give the impression to their teacher that they really put time and effort. Or on the flip side, they could have spent hours and hours and hours on a big project, but it's messy. So their teacher thought they didn't put effort into it. But when I think of the thinking work that I know makes the difference in a child's learning, it's not that stuff, a presentation, you know, like sometimes that learning is really the nitty gritty. It's our problems a day. It's the lecture on the whiteboard where I'm having a child actually explain to me their understanding and thinking. Like, one good measure as to whether your child knows something well enough is, can they teach it to you? Can they explain their thinking? Can they explain their understanding? So oftentimes I have kids go in my mini classroom and, you know, teach me what they just learned. learn to make sure that it really has made sense, that it's really stuck into their brain. I want to make sure that they've actually understood it. We're not just going through the motions. Sometimes we can finish something and there's no real knowledge. We have to make sure that children actually understand what they're doing. Sometimes the deepest thinking, the deepest learning, the deepest understanding isn't always shown in the way that's the most polished and clean. When I watch my students go through the process of learning something new or something that they don't understand yet, it's often very messy. And I want them to be able to own their process, own what they're doing, and make the understanding their own. That's not always in the most pristine way. I am in the process of creating a visual-based reading program, and I'm doing the demos to show how ideally it would be. But then when I look at how kids act, even if they know these practices, a spell read, tracking, sweep reading, or simile mastery with clay, the process and the conversation and the wiggling, you know, it's not as pristine and clean and as we want in the most ideal way, because kids are kids. They're going to act in whatever way that their personality dictates sometimes. And it just reminds me, I have a lot of those back of the class type of kids, and they're almost perplexed when they meet me for the first time because they realize that nothing goes through our time together. And nothing that we're going to do just be glazed over. There really is this emphasis on true understanding and learning. And they know they're probably going to have to summarize or share or explain their thinking before it gets put aside and we go on to the next thing. I just watched this video on Instagram, and I did share it on my page when I posted the podcast about how our brain and body really do learn through repetition. But there was this character, Carmen, walking to her mailbox every day through the grass. And over time, walking to her mailbox, there became a worn path. So very much the same, you know, when we're learning something new, we're walking along a path or a brain pathway, and we're trying to smooth that out. But the first few rounds, maybe the first 100 tries even, it's a bit messy. But eventually, if we keep doing that task, whatever process it is, over and over again, there becomes a smooth, worn path, and then it becomes polished and it looks a little less messy. It's really cool to see when kids make something their own, their body language starts to become one of ease, and they just get to the task with ease. And that repetition of helping both the brain and body work together has made that. You know, the process of learning to read and the process of learning to walk is really the same as this analogy. With enough practice, exposure, and time, right? When we're learning to walk, babies, they get up, they fall, they get up, they fall, they get up, they fall. When you listen to a kindergartner or first grader reading, they stumble, they practice, they go, they get some words one time, then they have the same word they don't get later. And it's just they get up, they stumble, they do, and practice, practice, practice. And with enough exposure and time for the brain, they make the connection. They start to have a bigger word bank. They have more exposure to the practice of reading, and it starts to become smooth over time. Reading is the only process for the brain, really, where we're taking the 3D world and using symbol for meaning and sound. Our brain needs to create new ways of processing, new neural pathways for this information. And when there's these new pathways in the brain, they're created through practice, patience, time, effort, and energy. Sometimes we want kids to get something really, really quick in the smoothest way. We really do have to give them grace and space to take the time to practice enough, to put enough effort, to put enough energy to become a master in these core subjects, a master in reading, a master in writing, a master in spelling, a master in mathematics, especially those core subjects. But in the early years, I'm talking about the kindergartners, the first graders, the second graders, there really is a certain amount of effort that is needed for mastery when we think about reading. And it can look pretty messy at times, the misreading of words, the jumps from predictable text to harder sound patterns. Oftentimes they struggle with that transition. And, you know, I have a theory. I've had this notion for about a decade at this point. There are kids who are neurodivergent who need different tools in order to make the correct connection in the brain, from visual symbols, letters, and numbers to the sound patterns. They need different tools, the brain work, but these tools actually help every child, whether they are neurodivergent or not. Here's the thing. if kids are not reading simple 3 or 4 letter words by the end of first grade, and we're talking quite a few, like 20 or more, this is a sign that they're needing different tools. There really is needed some intervention. And my theory is if we could get these tools that these neurodivergent kids need, we're talking about the ones with ADD, the ones who think differently, the ones who are more visual based, the ones with dyslexia, who need visual tools, brain work tools, processing tools, breath work, balance work, midline work, and using tracking to have the hemispheres talk for all the information they need to access when they're reading. If we gave these to them and all kids, because the kids who don't need these tools, it still benefits them. If we could give all kindergarten through second graders exposure to this brain work, the balance and crossing the midline, nose breathing, symbol mastery with clay, using that brain-body connection, spell reading, sweep reading, the tracking, especially the tracking with letters and colors, which require the left and right hemisphere to communicate smoothly. I've watched so many children who struggle with reading, spelling, and writing really, really struggle with a simple task. Word sorts using visual-based word patterns and the practice time they need, 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, out loud reading at grade level. Maybe, just maybe, no kids would struggle in the way they do now because they have better tools for them. Again, these kids who are neurodivergent, who don't hear phonetics, they will hear them eventually. I have one kid who did not hear any sounds. He was guessing when he was reading at the beginning of second grade. End of second grade is a completely different place. He's not guessing. He knows the words. He knows the sounds. But we didn't teach through phonetics. We taught through these other visual-based tools. But these visual-based tools, the neurodivergent kids, the kids who struggle, they need them. But every child benefits from them. And again, I'm putting these all in the visual-based reading course coming out in fall, hopefully, as long as everything goes smoothly. But I also feel like if parents and teachers knew this information, if there was a professional development out here in Hawaii that I'm hoping to get to as well, we could mitigate a lot of these problems that the younger kids are having. And I, as a classroom teacher, didn't know about these tools until I needed them. I went searching for them. And now over the last 10 years, last decade, I've really kind of systemized the ones that work the best. There's 11 of them. As I mentioned, this year I started with a student who couldn't hear any sounds at the beginning of school year. And now towards the end of the year, he's reading 7 pages in Fortune of the Milk. And we were doing level 1 books as a second grader at the beginning of this year and struggling through those. So it's just such a profound difference using these tools for the last, you know, school year, the last 7 or 8 months. I checked in with his teacher the other day and asked her if she had noticed that he's now hearing sounds. And she was like, yes, he's not guessing anymore. He's actually reading. So they need these tools. The rest of the kids who don't necessarily need these tools benefit from them as well. So that's the beautiful thing about really great teaching tools that get to all types of learners rather than the tools that traditionally leave some kids behind. But I always come back to how true learning is messy. And sometimes we need to let it just be that and not expect it to look a certain way until something is mastered, repeated, practiced enough time for a child on their timeline. Remember, some kids can master a concept or a word or a spelling pattern or whatever level reading lexicon they're doing the first time around. And some kids need multiple exposures. But until they've practiced and repeated and put enough effort with ease, efficient effort is really what I call that. These things can't be smoothed out and the learning process is messy, which is fine. We learn through actually doing. If we don't do anything at all, if kids don't try, there's no learning involved. They talk about the cliche of success, which is a truth in this case, fall down 7 times, get up 8. That's really how learning is. That's how success is created. That's how the businesses that we see that are thriving, there's failure to create success. In a more tangible way, just look at the progression of handwriting in students as they grow up and move through the years. Their physical handwriting changes with time, with practice, with maturity and mastery. We start with younger years where the letters are huge, mostly capitals, and then they start to become smaller and more clean and properly spaced and aligned. And that is through moving through the years, putting enough time and effort to go from that messiness into something that is clean. And all learning really is just like that as well. It's okay to be messy at first and then work towards mastery and cleaner presentation. We want substance versus looks. When we think about thinking, when we think about true learning, sometimes how something looks doesn't matter. They don't always have to be the most step-by-step perfect thing if their thinking is deep and profound and truthful. Be sure to sign up for the Foundation course. This course is here to support you. It teaches the exact foundational tools I have used with students to ease anxiety and help raise confidence and self-esteem so that they can succeed in all areas of their lives, including academics. It's available as a one-time purchase or as an ongoing monthly subscription with extra group support and monthly live stream. Be sure to sign up for the newsletter to stay in contact. Keep up with the Creating Confident Learners community on Instagram and Facebook @Creating Confident Learners. Have a blessed day and aloha.